Morning. We gather again this morning. We gather each week to remember who we are and where we are in our lives. And we gather in part to remember what's most important to us. And as I invite Sue Ellen to come forward, there she is, to light our chalice flame this morning, I know that many of us have on our hearts members of our community who are not with us this morning. And I'm reminded that traditions, much like planets are held in their orbit, traditions hold us steady in our lives. And so we kindle our flame this morning for Nancy and Bob Dobbs and their recovery and healing. And we kindle our flame as well for Minnow Trump and his continued healing. The flame of community, which holds us steady in our path. Come, let us be together once again.
Thank you, everyone. Our new members are going to stay up here because they're going to help us with our Getting to Know You game, the kids' message. If there are any other kids out there, I welcome you to come forward now. You can bring your grown-ups with you if you'd like. If you're new especially, come forward to this quilt. Okay. These new members have agreed to play with us our Two Truths and a Lie Getting to Know You game. Each person on a team of three will make one statement. Two of the people are telling the truth. One is not. It is our job to guess who is not telling the truth. First up, we have Marg, Caroline Tashish, and Hannah. Marg, please tell us something about yourself.
I have super hearing. I can hear birds cracking seeds in their nest up in a tree.
Caroline Tashish.
I was born in a car.
In a car. Hannah.
Once, while canoeing down the Little Shuswap River, we came round the bend and our canoe ran right into a bear that was fishing in the river.
Ooh, it's a hard one, right? Okay. Raise your hand if you think that Marg does not have super hearing. Raise your hand if you think that Caroline Tashish was not born in a car. Raise your hand if you think that Hannah's canoe did not crash into a bear. Okay, fascinating. Okay, which one of you said the thing that's not actually true?
There was a bear, and we were canoeing, but the bear was more frightened than we were and scrambled away before we could hit him.
Which means that Mark does have super hearing, and Caroline Tashish was born in a car. Okay, next up we have Nancy, Bruce, and Valerie. Nancy, please tell us something about yourself.
I'm passionate about aging.
Valerie.
I'm very afraid of that.
Bruce.
I once hosted a radio.
Okay, raise your hand if you think that Nancy is not passionate about aging. Need that. Raise your hand if you think that Valerie is not afraid of bats. Raise your hand if you think that Bruce never hosted a radio program. Okay, which one of you was telling the untruth?
I love bats.
She loves bats.
And snakes.
Excellent. Okay, last up, we have a team of four. Oliver, Candace, Kiana, and Eva. Oliver.
I've written two novels.
Candace.
I've performed on stage four times in Disneyland.
Four times in Disneyland? Kiana?
I lost my first baby tooth last year. I accidentally ate it.
That's a good one. That is a great one. You want to say, okay, so Eva's is her favorite.
Her favorite roller coaster is Big Thunder Mountain.
Okay. So raise your hand if you think Oliver has not written two novels. Raise your hand if you think that Candace has not performed on stage four times at Disneyland. Raise your hand if you think that Kiana did not eat her first lost tooth by accident. Raise your hand if you think that Eva's favorite, that Eva does not have as a favorite roller coaster, Big Thunder Mountain. Okay. Kiana, who really likes Big Thunder Mountain, your sister or you?
I do. It's my favorite ride.
Excellent. Thank you, new members. Thank you, kids.
Will you join me now in that place of reverence, that place of openness, that place of depth within you? And please join me in the spirit of meditation and prayer. Spirit of life, holy and mysterious presence, that which is larger than any one of us. We come to you as we do in these few and seldom moments when we pause and truly look within, to give thanks for our blessings, to offer our gratitude for those places of joy and of love in our lives. And as well, we lift up those places in ourselves that are hurting, those places in our world that are hurting. We know that in our hymnal are the words of William Blake, which say that joy and woe are woven fine. And we find that in our lives this is often true, that joy and sadness are connected, if not followed, one right after the other, that in the beauty of spring there is still loss, that in the midst of possibility and joy and hope, there is also death and accident and the inexplicable. And so in this moment, we ask for strength, for courage, for compassion. We ask that we might be able to hold it all, the joy and the woe, the beauty, the love, the brokenness, for all of it is life. And sometimes it is the rituals and the traditions like this one, this pausing once a week, that help us to hold it all. And so, for Menno and for Bob and for Nancy, we hope to be reservoirs of compassion and hope for a world full of violence and hatred and misunderstanding. We hope to be prayers of peace in our own lives. We hope to be as loving as we are capable for all of this, and for everything which remains wordless and nameless in our lives, but so deeply felt. We lift our hearts in prayer. Blessed be. And our traditions need playfulness, so thank you for that, bells. We need some humor, too. Well, this morning's reading was written by someone out in the ether. I was reading my favorite blog this week, and there was a response to one of the pieces that just caught me. It's written by a woman named Pamela Wallace, if that's her real name. And she entitled her response to the blog post, Creation. I woke with a gentle but urgent thought. I woke with something I needed to do, some kindness that needed offering, or some idea I needed to explore. I woke with a loose and blousy image, something I needed to know was trying to be known. And then, while the gauze was still across my brain and my gaze was still soft, I sat down at my desk and checked the news. Apparently, my airbag is a serial killer. Salmon have been taking Lipitor, and a woman accidentally mailed her cat. Closer to home, my daughter was diagnosed with an anxiety disorder, and the peanut butter was gone from the mousetrap, which, after day four, should really be called a feeding station. All of this astonishment before I even get to the real stuff of Pakistan and poverty and cancer and cures and beheadings and bombs. The attention and gasp is all worn out by the time you even check your first email. That fleeting thought you had this morning is crowded out. Before you know, the words you long to speak or the dream you need wake from, you are swarmed by the news of dying bees. And it's essential, of course, those dying bees, but so is something else. What's up close, what's within us, is so frequently swept away in a torrent of information and data from the outside world that the universe that is you is drowned. Drowned in headlines and crushed by all the little bits from across the globe. The weight of it all. The power of the moving tide of media and markets takes us along. And soon we are so far away from that single thought. The one deep inside of us that needed to be known. That we know nothing, and nothing new is created. Maybe that's why we're all so weary, even with headlines that make our hearts stop. We are weary because our own place in creation isn't reflected in that raging world. Somehow, all the words we've heard before. Maybe when we long for original thought, it is our own we are missing. We are the creation that will and can change the world. But we must find time for the silence. And space for the tender truth of us to emerge. Renewed patterns. You may be wondering, what does that poetic reading have to do with tradition? Well, when I read it this week, I was struck, like by a revelation, that this description that Pamela Wallace so beautifully gives us is exactly why we need tradition. We need traditions and rituals because in our fast-paced, inundated with information that we can hardly handle or hold or bear world, we need spaces and containers, repositories for our experiences. And this is something that it seems to me tradition is uniquely situated to do, to help us with. All week I've been wondering about the connection and the overlap between this motion that I've now started to understand between routine and ritual and tradition. We have lots and lots of routines, don't we? Things that we do every day that move us along the tide of our lives. That morning cup of coffee or tea, washing our face, brushing our teeth or hair. Some of us have even turned our routines into near rituals. I love it when I sometimes go to the food court at the mall at the Hillside Center and I see people meeting their buddies for coffee at Timmy's every morning. I wonder whether they're there every morning of the week, and if so, what they talk about. I'm considering joining, actually. I don't know if they'll really let me in, but, you know, it'd be fun. It's a routine that's become a ritual. I wonder about that. Would it do us good to turn more of our routines into rituals and more of our rituals into traditions? What does it do to us and for us to return again and again to certain patterns of behavior? We have a song in our hymnal that says we have to return again, and Pamela Wallace would love this, return again to the home of our soul. Return to who you are, return to what you are, return to where you are, born and reborn again. Return again, the chant says. And I think tradition would help us. I believe that a routine is transformed when we change our approach to it and the quality of our presence in it. If we add intention beforehand, attention during, and a sense of gratitude or honoring to the entire process, suddenly washing your face can become a reflection on how much of my beyond surface self I shared with the world that day. Perhaps if those folks meeting up at Timmy's had a little intention beforehand of what they were going to do when they were with their buddies, that instead of just sharing the most surface things, they were finally going to come clean about their deepest fears that day, the routine would become a ritual and then a tradition. We need this so desperately now. We need more than motion in our lives. We need to have a sense of value and purpose and meaning imbue the doing. I realize that it is this desire to find spaces and places of intention and attention that inspire some of my deepest admiration for the world's major religious traditions. It's part of what inspired me to walk part of the Camino, to follow in the footsteps of so many pilgrims over so much time, bringing all of their questions and worries and prayers. It's what inspires me when I think about our Muslim brothers and sisters praying 5 times a day. You know, Islam means, in part, surrender. And five times a day, if you've ever seen a Muslim person, it's hard to do in a robe, prostrate themselves down on the ground on a carpet. Someone said to me recently that there's a meaning in putting their heads all the way down to the ground. And they said, you'll notice that in this position, not only are you surrendering, but your head is below your heart. There is meaning in gestures that change us, literally change our perspectives. And if it's a tradition to do that five times a day, how different are you? How different do you become? Loving kindness meditations chanted in Buddhist worship, Buddhist temples, songs chanted by a cantor in Jewish synagogues, all of these practices encourage a pause. All encourage a time out of time. All create a space and a place for us to simply be and focus on the being. My friends, it is a sad commentary on our world today that we are too busy for tradition. With perhaps the lone exceptions of the family holiday traditions that some of us have inherited, or birthday celebrations that some of us have created, we simply don't have many traditions anymore. And so I want to invite you this morning, if you hear nothing else I say this morning, to think a little bit about what a tradition or ritual might be for you. What would it be like, for example, for you to create a tradition or a day for honoring loss of all types in your life? Would you do something different with the Day of All Saints and All Souls, the Dia de los Muertos? Or would you do something different to honor the losses in your life? What if you decided to create a ritual that became a tradition around all of the moments of joy you have ever known in your lifetime? What would that look like? It makes me think a lot about all of the creative rituals that I have seen or been a part of. I had this wedding couple once. I always try to encourage wedding couples to be creative because I say, well, if I just, you know, do a regular wedding, you know, it's not you. I want it to reflect you. I want it to be meaningful to you. And this one couple that I was working with took me so seriously that they took my breath away. They said, well, we've got a plan. We've got an idea. We'd like to go with it. I said, all right, let's go with it. And there we stood out in the middle of a park, rural Virginia, and I was standing under this arch-type thing that the groom and the couple had created, and it had all these little shelves on it. And in each little nook, in each little shelf, in this little amazing enclosure, there were little bottles, little glass jars that they had sent, they had picked up at all kinds of different little antique shops and things all around, and they had sent these glass jars and bottles to everybody who was going to attend their wedding. And they said to all of their friends and family, put a note in that bottle that is a wish you have for us, or a hope you have for us, or a dream you dream for us or the world. And they said, I said, well, this is really lovely. I like the message in a bottle. I like it, you know. But what's going to happen with all the messages? And they said, got a plan for that too. It's going to be a tradition in our marriage that every New Year's Eve, we will open another bottle and read that note, that dream, that wish that someone had for us on the day we got married. how a ritual becomes a tradition. They took a one-time moment of a wedding and they turned it into a lifetime of messages, of hopes, and dreams. And I loved that. I sometimes wonder what those notes said. I wish I could call them up now and say, what'd you read so far? I remember all of the routines that have become rituals that could become a tradition that I've ever seen and known. I remember singing as part of monastic communities, something I plan to do again on our sabbatical, just going and singing, being a part of a tradition of singing at every Benedictine monastery I've ever been to. You just go and you sing the Psalms 5 times a day. I remember an assignment I had in seminary to take sticky notes and put them all around my house in places I would see every day with little notes of encouragement, little notes of attention and intention. So I would go to wash my face or brush my teeth, and there it would be. Don't forget to breathe. Routines that can become rituals, that can become traditions. Think about it. Instead of going through the motions of our days, we would have motions that go through us. We would be changed by doing things that open us and bring us into deeper awareness about who we are and where we are in life. Traditions do that. They remind us of where we have been personally and communally. They remind us of what we still long for. They remind us of the state of our internal compass. What have you done to honor significant moments in your life? What do you do to try to add moments of stillness or reflection to your everyday? And if you're not doing anything now, what might you do? When something big happens, we're pretty good about marking the time. We take notice. We have a wedding. We have a memorial. We have a graduation. We create little pockets of time to absorb the tragedy or the joy. We're not as good at all the little stuff along the way. And here in this place, in this community, we have our traditions. Perhaps this is the only place and time during your week when you follow any tradition, when you light a candle, when you sing, carry the flame. What does this place and its traditions do for you? What does it mean for us all that we share these traditions regularly? Friends, I'm not sure what these traditions will do, at least not specifically, but I'm pretty sure that the more we practice setting aside time for intention and attention and gratitude and honoring, the more space we make for those moments, like the blogger wrote about, to not get crowded out by all the headlines, the more we make space to feel what is real, what is true in each and every day of our lives, how can that not improve our living? How can that not improve our daily way of being? How can that help but make each of us a better participant in the larger whole of life. May we find those traditions that will hold us fast, that will remind us that life is precious, and that will remind us to be as compassionate and loving as possible. So may it be. And amen. Life does indeed call us on, but it calls us not to sprint, not to read every headline, not to look at every push notification about some new disaster in some new part of the world, not some new bit of cruelty. Life calls us also to listen to that voice within us, that compassionate heartbeat that says, I can love more today. I will love more today. I love that hymn because it reminds us that bright the path before us lies. Joyful pilgrims, now we rise. Life calls us on again and again and again. May we answer that call as graciously, as generously, as fervently as we can. So may it be now and always.